Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
You know, there are some new awards coming out. Michael Rollman, who's been a fairly frequent guest on the show, and Anthony Bourdain, another ex-guest of the Restaurant Guys, are coming out with a new set of awards. I think they're kind of a thumb to the eye of the awards that currently exist. So they're coming out with kind of a different type of award. And this award show is going to happen, by the way, at South Beach Wine and Food Festival in February of 2008. But they've come out with some pretty interesting awards. We had a guy on the show a little while ago named Fergus Henderson, who talked about who's kind of the forerunner of this nose-to-tail movement here in the United States.
Explain what the nose-to-tail movement is.
Well, it's where, you know, where we eat the whole animal and especially focused on the offal and that which is the organs and parts that generally this generation hasn't eaten, but prior generations always did.
The heart, the liver, the kidneys,
the heart, the liver,
trotters,
the kidneys, lungs, all the parts of the animal that would be tossed away in today's society.
Made into dog food.
If it weren't for this comeback. But you know you've made it when Rollman and Bourdain name an award after you.
There's okay? The Fergus Henderson Award?
The Fergus Award is for the best achievement in offal.
Excellent.
And so that's a pretty serious award. But some of their other awards are pretty good, too. You know, the Chef Award for the least heralded chef, yet most deserving working chef. But the counterpoint to that, and not that he's not deserving, but is the Mario Award for the chef restaurateur who best multitasked, merchandised, multi-platform, and generally hoard himself or herself, yet still continue to make a significant and valuable contributions to the restaurant landscape.
I got
to
get me some of that. I want to win that award someday. Because,
but
you know,
I think this is going to, first of all, you know, Bourdain is everywhere now. He is just, you know, he has blitzed the media. He's got his own show on the Travel Channel. He is a guest on everybody else's show.
He's great.
He is everywhere. And, you know, he's just... He refuses to be part of the establishment. And, mm-hmm. you know, when he wrote his first book, Kitchen Confidential, you just knew that he was not going to be part of the establishment. He was going to say what he thought. And I don't always agree with what he thinks. Don't take that the wrong way. But he's always going to tell you what he thinks. He's totally irreverent and just has no concern over is this what the establishment believes or not.
You know, I have to say, one of the other awards that they've come out, these are the Golden Clog Awards, mm-hmm. is what these are called. I'm going to mention this, and I'm going to immediately refute. I'm going to admit mm-hmm. that it's funny, and I'm going to immediately refute it. Is the Rocco Award, yeah. obviously named for Rocco DiSpirito, and that's for the worst career move by a talented chef.
Well, I don't think you refute that. I think clearly Rocco going on television and doing the show, The Restaurant, was the worst career move by a talented chef
yeah.
that I've ever seen.
Well, I, you know, I have to say it's funny to talk about the Rocco Award, but, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. Rocco DiSpirito is a tremendously talented chef and a very nice guy, and his food is amazing. I've had Rocco's, some of the best meals Mark and I have had in our lives have been cooked by Rocco, and... You know, I don't know if he's ever going to get back in a restaurant kitchen. I hope he does, but he's got a lot to contribute, and he's a guy that should be listened to and taken very seriously.
Yeah, you're starting to see him again. I think he's reappearing. He's kind of reemerging from that, you know, from the depths at which that show drove him, you know, drove his restaurant out of business. Just it was such a horrible thing to watch on television.
And again, that show, I mean, some people I've spoken to have a negative impression of Rocco from that show. Mm-hmm. That show was creatively edited to make mm-hmm. the most dramatic TV. And if you look closely at the editing, because I mean, we had friends who worked there during the show, there were times when they juxtaposed images mm-hmm. of him talking to pretty women at the bar with times there are restaurant critics in the restaurant, it's a very busy night. Well, if you look closely when he's – and they seemingly cut back and forth between Rocco flirting at the bar and the busy night with the restaurant critic where things are going wrong. But if you look over the shoulders of the pretty woman he's talking to at the bar, it's not the same night. Rocco wouldn't do that. Rocco didn't do that.
And I don't – I totally hated, you know – the way he was portrayed on the show, and I think he did some things that were pretty dumb on the show. But don't kid yourselves. Rocco's one of the most talented chefs in the country right now. Speaking of some of the most talented chefs in the country,
Michelin has come out with its 2008 guide. Now, the Michelin guide was always the guide for Europe. The Michelin guide rates on a different system than most rating systems. Three stars is the most you can get. Two stars is a very prestigious restaurant. One star is an extremely prestigious restaurant. And to even be included in the Michelin guide is a mark of respect as a restaurant. So it's a different thing.
You know, there's something that I want to talk about as the Michelin guide has reappeared for 2008. One of the Michelin three star, which is the highest star rating you can get for Michelin, no longer exists.
Alain Ducasse at the Essex House has closed since last year. It was the highest rated you could be.
I think one of the things that gets forgotten a lot in all of this grandeur of great restaurants is how expensive it is to run a great restaurant. And the greater the restaurant, generally, the more expensive it is to run.
And the more risk you take. It's funny. We've talked about, I like to go to these places once in a while, and it certainly is once in a while, but, you know, we got some emails. I had mentioned recently that I had lunch at Pierre Garnier, which is a Michelin three-star restaurant in France. And lunch was close to $1,000, and probably $250 of that was wine, but $600 of it was food. And you think, and you know, you would look at maybe a similar bill at Alain Ducasse, maybe a little bit less in America because the American restaurants are a little less expensive. And you'd think, well, how could a restaurant that's, you know, fairly busy and charges, you know, for dinner for two, there's got to run you $500-$600 at least. And when you figure, you know, wine people go there, I mean, $700-$800 for dinner for two. How could a restaurant like that go out of business? And you think, oh, they're getting rich. They're ripping me off. You know what? There's money to be made in the restaurant business. There's more money to be made at owning a McDonald's than there is at owning a place.
The other thing is it takes a concerted effort from a group, not a single person, from a group of super talented people to keep a place like that going, running, and being at that level. You can't leave that alone for 15 minutes.
Right. Well, your waiters need to make $100,000 because you need the best waiters in the world. And I will tell you that what's happening in Europe is there are a number of restaurants who've decided to lose a star or decided not to pursue
the happens
next,
all the time.
Who decided not to pursue the next star because they say, you know what? I can make money as a one-star restaurant.
It's true. I've spoken to several people who own one-star Michelin restaurants. And invariably, they say, not invariably, but for the
almost
most part,
always,
they're saying, no, I'm never going for two stars because I don't want to put the investment into my restaurant that I'll never get back.
Well, and in the three-star restaurants, it's even more so. Mm-hmm. And what the three-star Michelin restaurants have to do is they have to, you know, that can be a launching pad to get your book sold, get on television, have your cookware done, and do all that other stuff. But the reason that the Michelin three-star chefs have to do that is because Michelin three-star restaurants, it's tough to make money in, and some of them do, and sort of at that level when you do, you can make it some pretty good money. But the investment that you need to put up front to make
tremendous
the money is incredible.
Tremendous, and risk.
And you can lose your shirt mighty quick.
And let's not forget the most expensive thing of everything, time.
Yeah.
You've got to have very talented people invest a ton of time.
Speaking of which, we're out of time. We need to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And we welcome today Chef Maru Ouattara. He's the chef and owner of Farah Olivia Restaurant in Alexandria, Virginia. And he has also recently appeared on The Next Iron Chef, the television Food Network's reality competition show. And he joins us here today to talk about his experiences on that show.
Chef Maru, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. It was a pleasure to watch you on the show. The next Iron Chef, for those in our audience who don't know what the premise of the show is, it's not Top Chef. We're not talking about taking people who haven't yet made a name for themselves and launching them to stardom. Chef Watara is an accomplished chef. He owns his own restaurant. He is in the spotlight already. This is a show that is deciding, based on the competition, who will join the ranks of the Iron Chefs on television. So all the folks who are invited to participate already are accomplished chefs. Chef Maru, what was it like for you in that position, competing for a title with other great chefs? It's a very different thing than the other TV reality shows that are on the air.
Well, it is very, very different. And the good part about it is that it's easier at that point because of the fact that if you go home, it's still good because the other chefs are very, very good chefs.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You're not
right.
Competing about housewives and people who can cook. You know, you're competing against professional chefs who are very successful in the business.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. One of the things you said, we've had a couple of the other contestants on, and while you were eliminated from the from that particular competition, you know, the real competition is every day running a restaurant well, which, you know, and having your own restaurant and preserving and maintaining and increasing your own reputation, which, of course, you do. That has nothing to do with the reality show. This is one episode of your life. You know, it's not a make or break kind of a thing.
Well, but you don't cook in front of millions of people.
That's true.
Millions of people watch that show. So, you know, it's kind of... You know, you have to. The first thing you have to do is start to show what you are about. You know what I mean? Don't think about the competition. Every chef there is great. So show your art, show your personality through your food, and that's what I did. The other didn't matter to me as much at all.
Well, you know, the funny thing is about, you know, the power of television. You got to show your art and your philosophy to millions of people, and whether or not the judges showed how you did in that competition, or how, regardless of how you felt you did in that competition, which is a somewhat unreal example of it's not exactly relevant to what happens every day in life and in cooking and in restaurants. But, you know, I can't imagine that wasn't great for you to be on that show. I mean, when we called you, I understand you just got off a television interview to come talk with us on the radio. I'd imagine you're having a busy couple of days at the very least. So was it a good thing in that perspective?
It's a great thing. A restaurant like mine, we're very small, so we don't have the means for that kind of PR. Mm-hmm. You know, this is national PR that can bring, that the next Iron Chef show can bring you. And also, you know, competing against talented chefs shows the nation who you are. You know, it's a great thing. An amazing thing that we participate in it.
Well, I love that they're bringing people from all over the country in as well. You know, a lot of us here, we're in New Jersey, so we know a lot about the New York and New Jersey chefs, and maybe we know a little bit less about the D.C. chefs, and even less about chefs from Texas or San Diego or other parts of the world. I think that one of the things the show is showing us is that there are really terrific chefs throughout the country now. It's not all centric in San Francisco and New York City like it was at one time.
No, it's not. And that's a good thing that the show did. You know, they're picked right. You know, you got eight chefs from all over the country. And all these chefs actually are winners in their state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all very successful in their state. So that, you know, it's, the Food Network did an amazing job doing that.
Now, your restaurant, your background, you were at Red Sage, which was the famous Southwest restaurant, and under your tutelage, when you had become executive chef, it became a contemporary American restaurant. You were then at Signatures, which was Jack Abramoff's restaurant, poor choice of partner, but great restaurant while it was there. Now you have your own place, Farah Olivia. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Farah Olivia and what you're cooking today when it's not in competition?
Well, at Red Sage it was different. You know, the philosophy was there, so I had to kind of follow what was designed prior to my arrival. And after that, I changed it to American, which, you know, doesn't fit completely with the concept, the design of the concept. And then when I went to Signatures, that was a totally different thing. It was very political. Obviously, what I learned over there is that politics are stronger than, I guess, food.
Yes.
So
yes.
That closed us. You know, and when I moved to Farah Olivia, I finally had a canvas I can draw on. I can do anything I want. That's my restaurant. I make the decision. So what we decided to do at this point is to show a different way of looking at American cuisine, you know, the ethnicity of America at this point. So we do creative American cuisine, but we use a lot of international spices, and most of those spices come from West Africa, Ivory Coast, where I'm from. You know, we infuse that into American, everyday American cuisine. So we give a very different flair and very different accents and flavor into our cuisine, which I couldn't do on Iron Chef because those ingredients were not there.
Sure, we got to see a little bit of it, but you could tell that your particular cuisine was held back, which is, I think, one of the things that might have been, you know, I've talked to a couple other people, and you know, each person's been eliminated, I think, because maybe they weren't allowed to do exactly the thing that they would do best, given a normal situation.
Hey, Maru, we need to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Maru Utara, chef and owner of Fari Olivia Restaurant, and most recently on The Next Iron Chef. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:25.
The Place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagut and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left Restaurant and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're speaking with Chef Maru Utara of Fari Olivia Restaurant in Alexandria, Virginia, and also most recently a contestant on The Next Iron Chef.
So, Maru, we were talking before the break about, you know, how you were eliminated on The Next Iron Chef. And basically, one of the things you said is, you know, it was important to me to stay true to myself. Do you feel that you were able to stay true to yourself, and do you think it was a mistake, or would you do the same thing over again?
I would do the same thing all over again. I don't think that the judges understood my food. They keep saying, you put too many things on the plate. I don't. When you look at my plate, you have four things, usually. You have a protein, a starch, a vegetable, and the sauce. So mm-hmm. that, you know, and I put it in a way that I like to eat. I like to taste every single ingredient, see exactly where they stand, you know. Check out the flavors first before I start combining everything.
It seems go ahead, I'm sorry.
I don't like my food piled on the top of each other. That's me. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think they should look at it that way. And you know, it's not about the flavor. So I'm glad that I was eliminated on something that
sure.
kind of I call silly.
Sure. It seemed that the judges were trying to impose their will on you a little bit and kind of force you into a certain style that
exactly.
might not have been your own.
Exactly, and you can't, I tell you, you cannot follow anybody else's dream and succeed at it, you know what I mean? Your dream is the only thing you can follow and understand so you can be successful. So I'm not cooking to please them, I'm cooking to please myself and the people who eat every day in my restaurant, and that's what I do and that's what they enjoy.
You know, it's interesting, especially when you talk about your particular take on cuisine. You know, I think that any show like this is limited in what it can demonstrate because it's not related to reality because that's not how you cook every day. You know, and the things that you cook with, if you had the other Iron Chefs have to cook with those for the majority of what they have to cook
sure.
with, that they would
sure,
not
if the,
do
if
as
we
well.
Laid out a bunch of African spices, I'm sure you would have crushed the competition.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, that's the most difficult part. You know, our everyday lives are not... There are not too many what I call the unknown factors in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know your surrounding. You have your spices you use every day around you.
I think the
show is very different.
I think the goal of the great restaurateur is to have as few unknowns as possible in an unknown world. Hey, we need to leave it there. Maru, thanks for coming on the show with us.
My pleasure.
Chef, thanks very much.
We'll be back after the break with more folks and more talk about Iron Chef America and another great chef after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
And today, we're pleased to welcome Chef Gavin Kaysen to the show. He's been named one of Food & Wine magazine's best new chefs in 2007. His California-influenced French cuisine has made El Bizcocho one of the top-rated restaurants in the San Diego area. And he's here today to discuss his time spent most recently on the Food Network's reality competition show, The Next Iron Chef.
Hey, Gavin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
So, Gavin, you were one of the youngest guys out there on this particular show, weren't you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think Aron was the next one up at age 31.
That's kind of a, you know, when you're talking about iron chefing, I think you're at a real disadvantage actually being a younger guy just because of fewer things, you know, fewer life experiences.
Yeah.
Did you find that? Did you find that it was tough competing?
You know, I found it to be both an advantage and a disadvantage. A disadvantage in the sense that, you know, you're younger, you've got a little bit less experience as far as what you've seen. You know, I mean, I've been in kitchens since I was 15, but with that being said, you know, most of my life, except for the last 3 years or 4 years of being the chef, I've been saying yes to another chef, so I've been doing somebody else's food.
Mm-hmm.
And had less time to express my own personality in the cuisine. So in that respect, it's a disadvantage. I found it to be an extreme advantage, though, when we would go into challenges because people wouldn't really worry about me, and then all of a sudden I would do food, and then they would say, okay, this kid's serious now. You know? So I found that to be the advantage part.
Plus, you're up on all the new things like, podcasting through iTunes and things like that. So
exactly.
So that some of the older chefs might not have been quite as familiar with.
Yeah, they were playing with the old school Nintendo. Now, while I had the portable PlayStation.
You're a PlayStation 3 guy, huh?
I think it's interesting. One of the things we've talked about with a number of folks who've been on this show is, you know, one of our favorite shows is Top Chefs. And one of our least favorite shows is, what's the Gordon Ramsay Scream Festival
called
again?
Hell's Kitchen, yeah.
But in both of those shows, one a good example of a show and one a bad example of a show, those are, you know, young up-and-comers. Everyone on this show is an established
chef.
Well, I'm sorry,
young up-and-comers or housewives.
Right, exactly.
Or
just fodder to scream at. But everyone on this show, I mean, these people, you're all serious chefs. You're in some pretty heavy-duty company out
there.
You know,
we keep using the word accomplished, and that's, I think, the best way to describe the caliber of the competition here.
What was it like?
You look at Tracy Desjardins. I mean, you know, she's got 3 restaurants in San Francisco, probably one of the most accomplished female chefs in this country ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right, yeah.
I mean, what she's accomplished is absolutely amazing. And I mean, it was just an honor to have met her, and now to be able to call her a friend is even better. You know, I mean, John Besh, Michael Simon. I mean, these are all of these an amazing ability to not only cook but also have a business sense as far as in the restaurant industry. I mean, I found it to be quite an honor and quite exciting to just meet with them. And we had a lot of time in between takes. You know, so we had some time to kind of hang out and just chat in the green room, and I think that was some of the best time right there was all the fun that we had back there. If they would have put a camera and a mic on us back there, you would have seen a completely different show because we were having a good time.
You know, I think people don't realize it, and Francis and I have been in the industry for, you know, 20 years now and have a lot of friends in the industry, and we are, you know, where do I get most of my information about what's going on and it's from talking to other people in the industry and bouncing ideas off of one another and that kind of commiserating about, you know, the day's events. That's a very important part of what we do is the relationships.
Absolutely. It's that networking and that constant, you know, resource that we can always go back to and say, all right, you know, you've got 4 restaurants. How did you start them? Or, you know, and just learning about it.
Yeah, I've got two. I want to give one of them back.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, though. I think that one of the things that's interesting about this show is the level of professionalism among everybody on it is very high.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of drama is very low. And some of that is due to the idea that, well, you know, not winning this competition is not a make or break to anybody on the show. Of course, winning it would be great, but it's not really a make or break.
Right, as opposed to, you know, you take Top Chef and the person who wins that is, you know, kind of got a career for themselves.
Right, catapulted 10 years ahead in their career.
And if you got eliminated in the first show, well, it doesn't really do anything.
Right.
Whereas this is a whole different thing, you know. But what you talk about is the camaraderie, and I think it is evident that in the way that people have respect for each other on the show, for the most part.
I agree.
Do you think that's
a nice part of it?
Do you think that don't you think that restaurant people are a little bit crazy or a little bit different than others?
No question. Otherwise, we wouldn't coop ourselves in a kitchen or a restaurant for our whole life.
I know. Isn't it crazy?
I mean, that's the joy of it, you know? It's the one part of the world that always accepts whoever comes in.
Yeah, but then sometimes it beats the tar out of them until they do it right.
Well, that's no matter what, but that's got to be, that's because it has to be right. It's got to be perfect. And we get away with it.
Well, now, but I want to ask you, going into a reality show like this as an accomplished chef, how relevant? Let's talk about television, reality TV programs. Let's talk about Celebrity Chefdom overall. But let's talk about the Iron Competition itself. How relevant is it to, you know, being a great chef?
Well, I mean, the biggest reason why I did this competition was because I found it to be an incredible opportunity to once again challenge myself and my skills. The only difference was is I was put in front of a national television. You know, and I mean, that you're going to get scrutinized one way or the other because people are going to have their opinions off of what they see and how the show is cut and edited. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be okay with that. And you just kind of have to get over that. And I think what's made the experience of the show so great is knowing the camaraderie between all the chefs. I mean, it's kind of funny. Watching the show on Sunday night, I probably spend most of the time watching the show texting back and forth all the other chefs, laughing with everybody, saying, "Wow, did you see how they cut that? It looks like I'm really upset with you," or, you know, things like that. I mean, it's just funny how we see it because we go through the whole day, and then we finally see how it's cut a couple of months later. And I think that they've done a tremendous job. The Food Network's done a great job in editing the show to making it look like there is that camaraderie and there is that sense of professionalism. Because the reality is, the biggest difference between this show and Top Chef is one very simple thing. When you win Top Chef, you win Top Chef, you get the $100,000, blah, 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 right? You get all that, and then you walk away with it.
Mm-hmm.
If you win Iron Chef, you still have to go back on that Food Network week after week, and you have to compete against chefs. And it's not like it's over. You know,
right.
You don't win, and that's it.
So I have a question for you. Is there a little part of you that's glad you didn't win?
yes and no. I mean, of course not in that respect. I mean, of course I wanted to win, but... You know, I think that this is just one of those things that's just going to help my career go, you know, and move forward. So, and it was a fun experience. I can't take it away from anybody.
Yeah, but I think that if you had gone on and won it and then realized, okay, I won, now I've got to come back here every week.
Every week I got to be on Iron Chef.
Wait a second, what did I do?
Yeah, it's going to be like, oh, no.
There might be a little buyer's remorse for the winner.
Let's talk a little bit about this show, the third show that you were just on.
Uh-huh.
Early in the show, I think that, you know, the people filming the show have the great opportunity of hindsight and to put in whatever they feel like. But early in the show, one of the things that they catch you saying is, well, the worst, you know, I understand that we won't have a regular kitchen to work in, but the worst thing will be if I have to start my own fire.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're cooking on a grill and you have to start your own fire.
No, it's crazy.
There's a little bit of irony there for sure.
That's what they call a psychic hit.
And at first, I have to say, my first inclination was, you know, that's really mean to give these guys a grill that they have to start, that's part of their time limit.
Ugh.
You know, that's really mean. But then I realized that, of course, since I have a wood-burning grill in my restaurant,
mm-hmm.
with no gas, that's not gas-assisted, that's just a plain old box that we...
Firekeeping, very important.
Then I realized, oh, yeah, I do that to my guys every day.
Yeah, it's true. They better learn how to do it. Yeah, no, it was crazy.
One of the things I want to talk about, I want to take a quick break, but I want to talk about editing. You brought it up before, and we've talked to a number of people from a number of different shows in a number of different formats, and it's sort of like, you know, what Stalin said about winning an election? I don't need to control the people who vote. I need to control the people who count the votes. You know, that's sort of like what editing is about. I don't need to control what happens. I need to control what happens in the editing room.
Right.
And I want to talk to you about your view of editing there. You seem to think that the editing was very fair on this show, but I want to talk more about television chefs and the role of celebrity chefdom overall in when we come back in just a moment. Our guest is Chef Gavin Kaysen of Il Biscocho restaurant in San Diego. He was most recently on The Next Iron Chef, and we'll be back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC time is 11:45.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 US patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking today with Chef Gavin Kaysen of Biscocho Restaurant in San Diego, California, and most recently a contestant on The Next Iron Chef. We want to talk about editing. The editing in the show, you feel, really captured the true spirit of camaraderie that was on the show. I would have been afraid of editing, and the thing that really, really would struck fear into me with editing is Rocco DiSpirito's experience. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Rocco as a person and as a chef, and we actually had a couple of friends who we knew Rocco before his show, of course, and we had a couple of people that worked for him. His wine director and one of his floor managers was a friend of ours, so we used to sometimes go and watch it. Once we even watched it with the staff when the show aired.
But easily one of the worst decision of Rocco's life was to go on a reality TV show.
But one of the reasons I think it was so bad was because I think those editors were out to make the best TV regardless of what it did to the chef. And there was editing done in that show that simply led you to believe that stuff happened in an order that it didn't happen, or things happened right next to each other that happened, you know, a week apart.
Right.
That portrayed Rocco unfairly in a negative light. I mean, were there any questionable editing decisions, and did you see any of that overall either in this show or in other food shows that we all watch on TV?
In this show I haven't really seen much of that, to be honest with you. I mean, a lot of the stuff that happened was really in sequence. The only editing that they will add every once in a while, which, truthfully, we don't even remember. Like, I'll watch it, and I'll think, God, I don't even remember saying that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because it's like you get interviewed so many times in a day. And that's, you know, that's the difference. But, see, I don't know. I think they're doing a good job with this editing. I mean, they're being smart about keeping it about the food. Because, like I said, the chef that wins, it's about his food. It has nothing to do with him as a personality. Zero. You know? And that's the thing. It's got to be about that food. And so I enjoy that they're being very serious about that. But there are other shows out there. I mean, I had a friend, Brian Malarkey, who was on Top Chef this year. You know, and there's other shows out there that sometimes it's hard. The editing, you just can't help it, you know.
You know,
That's what it is.
I have to say, Gavin, anytime that I find myself saying I don't remember saying that and somebody's telling me that, it's usually my wife.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't remember saying that.
Yeah,
well, you
pretty
did.
Much for me too. Except this time, this is my only other excuse.
Well, let's talk about El Biscocho, which is, you know, the reality, not the reality show, but the reality. What you
right.
do every day.
Yep.
Talk to us about the kind of food you cook out there when no one's giving you a basket of ingredients and telling you to light a fire in the middle of a field.
I'm sorry, when nobody's forcing you to have a basket of ingredients that somebody else picked for you.
Say you were a chef and could order whatever ingredients you want. What kind of food are you cooking, and what's your mission with food? Out of Biscocho.
Yeah, exactly. No frog leg and raspberry combination.
Yeah, exactly.
No, El Biz is, it's located at the Rancho Bernardo Inn up here in San Diego, and it's, you know, it's a great restaurant. It's we do what we kind of call fanatically seasonal French fare. It's very much rooted in the classical French techniques, but we utilize all of the amazing produce that we have around us in San Diego. And it's been an incredible experience. You know, I've been the chef there for 3.5 years. We've had an incredible run. It's been a lot of fun changing the menu. We do a lot of tasting menus. For example, the other night we had about 100 guests a la carte, and 42 out of the 100 people ordered what we call the chef collection menu. And that's a 10-course spontaneous menu. We made it 11 courses for that night.
That's great. What that tells you is that people in your area are putting a lot of faith in you. Mm-hmm. Whenever somebody puts you in their hand,
absolutely.
I'm sorry, puts themselves in your hands like that.
Absolutely.
Well, and that area of California, while San Francisco was always known as a food destination, and L.A. is every 2 years either known as the best place for food, or the up-and-coming place, or the failure of a place for food. San Diego was sort of never really, the San Diego area was never really seen as a great place for food, and that's changing. You're part of the reason why. How is the change coming about? Is it just that people are more aware, the chefs are finding it there? For a long time, it was like, you'd go to San Diego and you'd say, the weather is perfect, the food that's available is amazing, and the restaurants are mediocre. But now that's changing, right?
Yeah, I think, you know what it is, truthfully, I think it's all of the group of chefs that are coming in. I mean, we've had, you know, guys like Trey Fauché and Bernard Guillas and chefs that have been here for quite some time. They've really kept everything alive. What's changed is the amount of young chefs that are coming back into this city now. And they're understanding the importance of the produce around the city and how important it is for us to utilize that produce and the meat and the fish, et cetera, and make the restaurants great. And, you know, we're shying away from having to hire the surfers as waiters, which is a big difference,
mm-hmm.
to be completely honest with you. I mean, these guys, when I first came here, I moved here from London, England. I'll never forget it. I showed up to work, and one of the guys showed up about 20 minutes late, and he told me the swell was good. And I'm like, the what?
You know what's funny? I was recently talking to a chef who was talking about New York waiters, and we have some great waiters in New Brunswick, and we hire some good people. And we tend to, because we're in a city with a large university, we're able to hire a lot of people who are just getting into the business as bussers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they work for us for 3 or 4 years, and lo and behold, by the time they're a senior in college, they're great waiters because we've trained them.
Right.
But in New York, you, though, have the luxury of hiring great waiters. And this guy said, yeah, in New York, a lot of the waiters are actors, but they're such good actors that they act like pretty good waiters.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. There's no surfing involved in the restaurant. So when there's a swell, they're late, that's it.
But, you know, wouldn't your customers understand that a little bit, too, in San Diego? A little less uptight out there from a customer perspective?
You'd hope so, but it's no.
There is no silver lining. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment talking more with Gavin Kaysen, most recently of The Next Iron Chef and of Ilby's Kocho Restaurant out in San Diego. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with Gavin Kaysen, who was most recently on The Next Iron Chef. And Gavin has been at Ilby's Kocho out in San Diego. But, Gavin, I understand there's a big change coming up for you. There's a move in your very near future.
There is a big change. You know, I've been honored to take over the reins as executive chef of Café Boulud for Danielle Boulud out in New York City on 76th and Madison. So I'm heading out there. My start date's November 12th, but the current chef, Bertrand Chamel, will be there for a month during the transition, and then mid-December he'll pass the torch over, and I'll gladly accept it and go from there.
Okay, San Diego to New York. You ready for the big change?
The bright lights, big city, as it were?
Really, bright lights, I was thinking more like snow and wind.
Well, bright lights, big city, small apartment.
That's exactly. There you go. Now you're talking. No, it'll be cool. You know, I mean, I think it's an exciting time in my life to be able to do something like this. And you know, Chef Danielle and I have been friends for quite some time, and he and I have always gone back and forth trying to figure out a way to work together. And the timing just kind of worked out with this. And you know, I had actually secured the position before the show even came out. So, you know, it was nice to know that he looked towards me for that.
Well, it's definitely a great opportunity and a great restaurant. So
absolutely.
We'll be happy to have you on the East Coast where we can eat your food.
Definitely. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and you know, I think what will be an interesting segment is we've talked a lot about having a restaurant out in San Diego and your experiences there. I think that after you get settled in, maybe in January, we can talk about coming in to head up an organization across country like that. San Diego is a very different city culturally and culinarily than New York City.
Yep.
And will you come back on the show and talk with us on January about the change?
Very curious to talk to you about the differences in culture, in wait staff, in cooks, you know, and what's available to you.
Yeah, no, I'd love to, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be a, it's definitely going to be a change, you know. I mean, the luxury that we have down here in San Diego is the farmers, and I mean, I have a guy who literally, I write the menu and give it to him, and then he grows the produce. I mean, that's how hands-on we are with it.
But you know what? It's, we do a similar thing up here. We meet with our farmers in January and February and plan out the year. It's just got to be a little more. We don't have as long a growing season,
right,
but it's
right,
cool to do up here as well.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. There are farmers in Jersey and in upstate New York who are doing
Long Island
stuff.
Everywhere.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I've been doing a lot of research on it. It seems like a great place to attack. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited about it.
Well, Gavin, we need to leave it there. Thanks for coming on the show. Gavin Kaysen, soon to be cooking in New York. We'll put up information on him about our website. Hope you enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schock.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.